Mathcast. Mathematics for the masses. Hello and welcome to Dan's Mathcast, where you can learn and have fun with all kinds of mathematics. I'm your host, Dan Bach of dansmath.com. Show number one, November 15th, 2005. Hi, my name is Dan, and this is a math podcast, the first of its kind to my knowledge. I'm really glad you joined me today. This is my very first podcast. My plan is to release two shows each month on the 1st and the 15th. Each show will have a full plate of mathematics for you, an interesting math lesson, some website and listener email, a problem of the week challenge, some study secrets, and several how about that math features. You can send me email anytime at podcast@dansmath.com. As time goes on, I'll explain how to send me audio comments and questions, and I hope to play some of them on the air. If you've been planning to review, catch up, or extend your math knowledge, this is the place for you. Each week, I'm going to summarize one chapter of a math textbook. Also, if you have any suggestions for future topics, pass them along. I'd love to try them out. Well, here's the menu for show number one. Our chapter of the week is going to be chapter one from my pre-algebra book. In Math for the Masses today, we're going to feature the celebrated number pi. We'll answer some reader email from my website, explode some probability misconceptions on math or myth. Our advanced topic of the week is rates of growth. I'll provide you with a challenge problem for next time. And if you're persistent, we're going to end with a math joke. Know your podcaster. A little about me. My name is Dan Bach. I'm a community college math instructor at Diablo Valley College, that's DVC in Northern California. I'm a webmaster at dansmath.com, an avid runner and coffee drinker, an author of a math textbook, and I have a CD-ROM out, Dan's Basic Skills Math Clinic. You can visit www.dansmath.com for details on all these ingredients, and while you're there, browse my online lessons, feature pages, and even enter my Problem of the Week contest. My site has been up since 1997, way back in the 20th century. Earlier that century, I attended UC Berkeley as an undergraduate, graduate, teaching assistant, and all-around troublemaker. And now, on to the math part of our show. Dan's Chapter of the Week. Okay, every show we're going to talk about one chapter from an excellent mathematics textbook. Of course, I'm talking about Pre-Algebra, Mathematics for a Variable World by Dan Bach and Patty Leitner. Patty and I have worked really hard on this book for years. It's out in the third edition now. It's published by the McGraw-Hill College Division, copyright 2006. And the first chapter is Working with Whole Numbers. Now, no matter where you are in math, you can always start from there and learn a little bit more. In this first chapter, we're going to talk about place value, the four basic operations, prime numbers, factorizations, greatest common divisors, and least common multiples. Well, there's a real plateful for you right in one chapter. Section 1.1, Whole Numbers and Place Value. You know how you write these big numbers in columns? Then you start with the ones digit and move over to the left, the tens digit, hundreds, thousands, ten thousands, etc. Do you know all the names of the really big numbers? There's a thousand, that's a one with three zeros after it. A thousand thousand, that's a million, a one with six zeros after it. Then a billion, a trillion, a quadrillion, and so on. Each time, three more zeros. Actually, a Google is a one with 100 zeros after it. A million seconds is about 12 days, while a billion seconds is maybe 31 years. Section 1.2, Adding and Subtracting Whole Numbers. In the old days, before everyone was glued to their calculators, we had to keep numbers straight in their columns to be able to add or subtract them. Now, of course, when you add things like 58 plus 49, you have to not only line them up, but remember to carry the 1. 8 plus 9 is 17, put the 7 down, carry the 1. 1 plus 5 plus 4 is 10, so the answer is 107. To do a subtraction, you also line up the ones digit, the tens digit, and so on, and you might have to borrow from one column. I call it stealing. So, for example, in the problem 72 minus 49, 9 is bigger than 2, so you borrow 1 from the tens column, make the 7 into a 6. That causes a 12 in the units column, 12 minus 9 is 3. Then you go back to the tens column, 6 minus 4 is 2. Of course, the answer is 23. 72 minus 49 is 23. You got that? Good. Section 1.3, Multiplication of Whole Numbers and the Laws of Arithmetic. The operation of multiplication is really a repeated addition. So, for example, 4 times 3 means you write down 3 4 times and you add them together. 3 plus 3 plus 3 plus 3 is really 4 times 3, and that would be 12. The answer to a multiplication problem is a product, the answer to an addition problem is a sum, and the answer to a subtraction problem is the difference. Addition and multiplication have special properties called the commutative law and the associative law. Commutative means you can do the operation in either order. 3 plus 7 is 10, 7 plus 3 is also 10. Same for multiplication. 4 times 9 is same as 9 times 4. And that's how much? 36, that's right. Now there's also another law called the distributive law. 3 times the quantity, 4 plus 5, is the same as 3 times 4 plus 3 times 5. That 3 kind of gets distributed to the other two numbers. Section 1.4, Division, Quotients and Remainders, Divisibility. Division is really the opposite of multiplication. For example, 12 divided by 4 is 3, just because 3 times 4 is 12. Long division is gone into in detail on the text, and divisibility tricks are for telling whether something is a multiple of 2, if the last digit is even, multiple of 3, if the digits add up to a multiple of 3, and so on. Section 1.5, Prime Numbers, Factor Trees, and Prime Factorizations. The word prime usually means the best, you know, a prime cut of meat, a prime location, in the prime of life. So if a number is prime, it's got a big reputation to live up to. A prime number is a number that nothing else goes into besides 1 and itself. 7 is a prime, but 6 is not because 2 and 3 go into it. 2 times 3 is called the prime factorization of the number 6. Section 1.6, Greatest Common Divisors and Least Common Multiples. The greatest common divisor, or GCD, of two numbers is the largest whole number that goes into both of them. For example, the GCD of 12 and 18 would be 6. The least common multiple is the smallest number that both numbers go into. The LCM of 10 and 8 would be 40. Homework for next time. Two problems to think about for the next podcast. Number 1, what is the largest prime factor of 13,596? And number 2, write the number 1,000,000 as the product of two numbers, neither of which ends in a zero. We'll have answers to these two questions on the next Dan's Mathcast. Okay, we're going to take a short half-minute break right now and be right back with our feature on the number pi.
Do you need to improve your math skills, but are just too cheap or poor to hire a tutor? Then go to www.dansmath.com. That's dansmath.com. You'll find free lessons from arithmetic and algebra to calculus and beyond. Check out Dan's feature pages on supercomposite numbers, nested circles, and more. For a real challenge, enter Dan's Problem of the Week contest and browse through over 200 old puzzles in the archives. Read about Dan's textbook, Pre-Algebra, co-written with me, Patty Leitner. And now, back to our show.
Mathematics for the Masses. It's time for our feature, Mathematics for the Masses. This time we talk about the number pi. That's Greek for the letter p. If you measure the distance around a circle, the circumference, and divide by the distance across the circle, the diameter, you get exactly pi. It's got to be a perfect circle. Pi turns out to be a little over 3. Oh, about 3.14159265358979323. The decimal for it goes on forever. It's an irrational and even transcendental number. This means the decimals for it go on forever without repeating. No, I was not reading those decimals off. I've got it memorized to about 100 places or so, but they now know pi to the 1.2 trillionth decimal place. On the other hand, there are several predictable infinite series for pi. The most common one is that pi is equal to 4 times the quantity 1 minus a third plus a fifth minus a seventh plus a ninth forever. The great Ramanujan from India in the early part of the 20th century figured out many infinite series and amazing facts about pi. A little history about pi. You can find this on my website. Just go to dansmath.com and scroll down a bit and click on Dan's Pi page in the features. Now, throughout history, the value of pi, in the Old Testament and the state of Indiana, the number 3 is used. Before that, the Egyptian value of pi was 256 divided by 81, something to do with the area of an octagon. That's about 3.16, so that's a little pretty far off, a couple of hundredths. Archimedes got it a lot closer around 2,500 years ago with the fraction 22 sevenths, or 3 and 1 seventh. That's within almost a thousandth. 355 divided by 113, my personal favorite, was used in China about 1,500 years ago, and that's within a couple of millionths. This is 3.14159292. Now, one of the classical Greek geometry problems is that you can't square a circle. That is, you can't construct a circle and a square with a straight edge and compass that have the same area. That basically means you can't construct the square root of pi. Now, there were a lot of circle squarers a couple of hundred years ago that claimed to have proofs that indeed you can do it, but of course it was already proved impossible. A couple of their claims were that pi was about equal to the square root of 10. Also, pi is about equal to the cube root of 31. I call that the Baskin-Robbins approximation. A good source for more material on pi is the great little book, The Joy of Pi, by David Blattner. David also writes books and articles about Photoshop for Macworld magazine and other publications. And there's a link to this book on my pi page. Now, I mentioned that pi is irrational. It's not equal to any fraction, but there are fractions that come very close. For example, 3.14 is a common approximation. That's, of course, 314 over 100. There's a fraction. If you use continued fractions, you get some amazing approximations, including 22 sevenths and 355 over 113. Just Google continued fractions or go to Math World. One popular book and movie that featured pi was Contact, written by Carl Sagan, made into a movie with Jodie Foster. This prominently featured the randomness of the decimals of pi. Well, that's it for pi. This is Dan, and I'll be back next time with more Mathematics for the Masses. DMQA. Well, it's time to dip into the Dan's Math email bag for some questions and answers. Remember, you can always send me mail at podcast@dansmath.com. And if you want to send in an audio comment or question, just attach an MP3 file to your email. I'll try and use it on the show. Now we're lucky enough to get Patty to read the questions from our email bag. Patty?
Thanks, Dan. The first question for DMQA came in recently from an S. Rogers, and he or she wants to know, how do you make 4 rows of 5 trees with only 10 trees?
Now, if you're a math teacher, especially of little kids, this is a good one to give your class. The nicest solution I've found, and I like symmetry, is to put the 10 trees at the 5 corners of a 5-pointed star and the 5 intersection points in the center. Nice answer, huh? What's next, Patty?
This summer, Lori wrote in with a question. Hi, Dan. I really need help. I'll soon be taking a standardized test consisting of multiple choice questions for which there are 5 options for each question. We get 7 points for each correct answer, lose 2 points for an incorrect answer. Questions left blank don't lose or gain points. What is the minimum number of options that I should be able to rule out before making a guess? Thanks. Signed, Lori.
Lori, that's an interesting gambling question. So what we need is the expected value concept from statistics. You multiply all of the possible outcomes by their respective probabilities, add them up, and you get what's called the expected value. As it stands, you have a 1/5 chance of guessing right and getting 7 points, and a 4/5 chance of guessing wrong and getting -2 points because you lose 2 points. So the expected value is 1/5 times 7 plus 4/5 times -2. That's 7/5 minus 8/5, which is -1/5. So you lose on the average of 1 point every 5 questions just by guessing. But if you eliminate one option, well, it's a 1/4 chance of being right and 3/4 chance of being wrong. So now your expected value is 1/4 times 7 plus 3/4 times -2. That turns out to be 1/4. That's a positive value. So if you can rule out one or more options, then you should guess. Good question, Lori. Now finally, it's time for our toss-up question, which I'll answer on the next show.
And here's our toss-up question, sent in by Sharon a few years ago. A boat weighs 1,500 pounds more than its motor and 1,900 pounds more than its trailer. Together, the boat and motor weigh 5 times as much as the trailer. How much does the boat weigh?
I'll answer the toss-up question on the next show, but work on it in the meantime. Remember our motto, math is not a spectator sport. Now after this short break, we'll be back with our math or myth feature, and we'll also go to our advanced topic, this time rates of growth. Stay tuned. Now a tech break, sponsored by DansMath.com. How do I put this podcast together, people ask? Well, I have an Apple iMac G5 running GarageBand version 2, and I do my own music from the loops and instruments in GarageBand, part of iLife 05. I'm speaking into a Parrot microphone plugged into my Griffin iMic, which plugs right into USB. I export into iTunes and then compress to MP3. Then it's a matter of storing the MP3 on a server, setting up an RSS feed, getting on the iTunes Music Store, and having folks like you subscribe. Thanks for listening, and remember to check out my free site, www.dansmath.com, for all your math nerd's needs. And now, back to our show, Dan's Mathcast. Math or Myth? It's time for our first Math or Myth feature. Today we investigate some probability myths, coins and dice, and a couple of sucker bets. Probability is one of the most important and most misunderstood subjects. The probability of an event happening is the chance that it will occur. It's usually expressed as a fraction, a percentage, or even a decimal. If there are n equally likely outcomes to an experiment, and your event involves k of those, then the probability of your event happening is k divided by n. What does that mean? Suppose you roll a die. That's the singular of dice. It has 6 sides, so the sample space, we call it, there are 6 possible outcomes, 1 through 6. Suppose you want an even number to come up. There are 3 even numbers, 2, 4, and 6. So the number of ways your event can happen is 3. The probability of an even number coming up would be 3 over 6, or 1/2. Now suppose I've rolled 7 even numbers in a row. Here's a common probability myth. I'm due for an odd number, so I would bet heavily on odd. False. The idea is that every time there's a 3 out of 6 chance of an even and a 3 out of 6 chance of an odd. So don't be fooled by the history. The dice have no memory. You hear this in sports a lot too, especially baseball. Oh, he's struck out 7 straight times. He's due for a hit. Well, maybe not. Maybe he's going to strike out the rest of his life. Let's hope not. Here's a sucker bet. Suppose somebody tells you, I'm going to flip 2 coins. And there are 3 things that can happen. Both heads, both tails, or one of each. They tell you, I'll take the one of each, but you should pay me 2-to-1 odds if I win. Don't take the bet. They're fooling you because there are actually 2 ways that it can come up one of each. One coin heads, the other tails, or one coin tails and the other heads. So really they have an even chance of winning because 2 out of the 4 outcomes are one of each. Don't be ripped off. One last surprise in the world of probability. Suppose you have a room full of people. Well, not too many people, say a normal class size, say 28 students. That'd be a perfect class size. Little perfect number joke there. Now you bet your class that you think that 2 of them have the same birthday. They say, no way, there's 365 days in a year. I bet nobody has the same birthday as me. So they're willing to take the bet. But let's think about it. The first person has some birthday. The second person probably doesn't have the same birthday. In fact, 364 out of 365 chance that they'll have a different birthday. The third person, you'd multiply by 363 over 365, because there are 363 birthdays that are different from the first 2. For the next student, you'd multiply by 362 over 365, and so on. Do that for 28 students, and you're going to multiply all the way down to 338 over 365. Now when you multiply all those fractions together, even though each one of them is close to 1, there are a lot of them. The final product turns out to be approximately 0.346, the probability the birthdays are all different. That leaves 1 minus that is 0.654, 65.4% chance that 2 people will have the same birthday out of a random set of 28. Wow. It turns out even with a group as small as 23 people, the odds are better than 50% that 2 people will have the same birthday. One time I had a small class of 15 people, so I knew the odds were in the favor of nobody having the same birthday. So I bet them accordingly. There's only a 25.3% chance that 2 people out of 15 have the same birthday. Unbeknownst to me, there was a secret pair of twins in the class. They knew it. I didn't. they won the bet. Well, I'll be back next time with another Math or Myth. Advanced topic of the day. Our advanced topic of the day here on our first show is rates of growth. The word advanced is a relative term. Today it just means I'm going to be using the language of variables and functions. In the future it might involve calculus, differential equations, or any number of advanced topics. Now let's look at a few types of growth. The simplest is linear. For example, a kid that's t years old is approximately 20 plus 3t inches tall. This means they start at 20 inches and grow 3 inches per year. This is a linear function, h of t equals 3t plus 20, where the slope, or rate of growth, is constant, 3. We might have quadratic growth, where the f of t is proportional to t squared, as in a free-falling rock. The distance it falls in t seconds is 16t squared. This means that the rate of change of the distance is 32t, so the speed of the rock increases 32 feet per second every second. This is called the acceleration of gravity, 32 feet per second per second, 32 feet per second squared, although I don't know what a square second looks like. Exponential growth is for things that grow at a rate proportional to their size, like a bank account. A bank balance earning 3% compound interest would grow exponentially. Also, the world population is growing exponentially at a rate of about 1.27% per year. I learned that the number of cars worldwide is growing at 4.5% per year. So in about 42 years, the population has doubled, but there are 10 times as many cars. The formula for the number of people in the world would be n equals 6 times e to the 0.012t, where t is years since 1999 when the population was 6 billion, and the 0.012 in the exponent represents the 1.2% population growth rate. The factorials grow even faster than exponentially. N factorials defined as n times n minus 1 times n minus 2, etc., down to 2 times 1. So while 3 factorial equals 6, 6 factorial equals 720, and 10 factorial equals 3,628,800. 100 factorial has 158 digits. And by Stirling's formula, n factorial is approximately the quantity n over e raised to the n times the square root of 2 pi n. This approximation for 100 factorial is within 0.01%. An example of a very slow rate of growth would be, say, the number of digits in the nth prime. The 100th prime is 541, 3 digits. The 1 billionth prime has only 11 digits. By the prime number theorem, the nth prime is about n times the natural log of n. This estimates the billionth prime within about 9%, but eventually does better. So, the number of digits in the nth prime is about log base 10 of the quantity n times ln of n, so roughly the common log of n. There are some functions that grow faster, then slower, like the logistic or learning curve. It's the same as the spread of a rumor or disease in a closed group. The rumor spreads quickly, almost exponentially at first, then slows to a crawl when most of the group has heard the rumor. Well, that's it for our first advanced topic, rates of growth. I'll be back next time with another one. Challenge problem of the week. On my website at dansmath.com, I have a problem of the week feature. It usually isn't really every week, just like this podcast. Here's a problem to think about for next time. You know, a prime number has only two divisors, 1 and itself. For example, 5 has divisors 1 and 5. The number 6 has more divisors, 1, 2, 3, and 6. Which number less than or equal to 1,000 has the very most divisors? I'll answer it next time. Math joke of the week. And now your reward. This was sent in recently to my website jokes page. What did one parallel line say to the other parallel line? We really shouldn't be meeting like this. Well, that's it for the inaugural edition of Dan's Mathcast. I want to really thank you for listening in. So recommend me to your friends, check out dansmath.com, and I'll see you next time on Dan's Mathcast.